It's time for the Taking Notes podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 140 of the Taking Notes podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
And Julian, who did we speak to today?
Today we talked to Scott Caveaton, and he is the CEO and founder of Urban Airship. Urban Airship is a company that provides push notification services for mobile app developers. And, you know, even though that sounds like just kind of a small thing that, you know, oh, they're sending out messages or something like that, it was very interesting talking to him because you realize very quickly that, it's just a lot more than that. When you start thinking of the implications of, kind of sending all of those messages and being able to target people and use the information. We talk about geolocation a little bit. They just last month had, I think, their 5 billionth message sent through an application through their service. So they are just really moving and shaking as a company, and their services. If you just hear, oh, they do push notifications, you may not think that's very exciting, but take a listen to the podcast and you realize that there really is just a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, and you know, we didn't go into too much detail about some of their other product offerings like AirMail and stuff like that, but really, really cool, engaging stuff. We're not just talking, like Julian said, about push notifications. We're talking about tying in push notifications with geolocation. We're talking about adding in push type inboxes inside of apps. And the beauty of it all is that you as a developer use their libraries, right, their platform to do all this, and you don't have to roll your own, right? So you can focus on creating great apps and not have to worry about, you know, rolling your own code to do all this great stuff. But let's listen to what Scott has to say, and we actually do talk about pie and bacon as well, right?
Absolutely.
All right, let's roll.
Okay, here we are with Scott Caveaton, and Scott, it's great having you on the show. Now, I think you're lounging on your back porch and kind of participating in the podcast right now, is that right?
Yes, I am coming to you from the Urban Airship World Headquarters in Portland, Oregon. We've got a nice little back deck here, and it's one of the last days of summer, so I might as well enjoy a little bit of it. So yeah, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's just a good life you have right there, I think.
yes, it's a privileged life, for sure. Yeah.
All right, well, just to start the podcast off, I just want to kind of rewind for a few years, and I first heard your name in conjunction with bacon.com. I actually read the bacon.com book I'm the one. It was good, and I have this kind of fascination with I guess bacon products and that whole meme anyway. And so before we even talk about Urban Airship, I just kind of want to just get that out of the way. And if you could just kind of give us a 1 or 2 minute summary of your experience with bacon.com and that whole process, because I think that's actually going to end up being relevant to some of the discussion we have later on too.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. There's just this overlapping between technology people and the love of pork products. I don't know why, but I was no different. A couple of years ago, as a side project, I wanted to do more with bacon. For some reason, people kept sending me links, and I started a blog. And next thing I know, I just was kind of thinking, God, why don't I sell this online? And instead of spending a year to try and build something and figure it out, I got together with a couple friends, Jason Glassby and Michael Richardson, and I said, look, I'm going to fund this thing to the tune of, a really small dollar amount, but I want to launch this thing in 30 days. I want to go live with a website. I want to have fulfillment. I want to have, manage the supply chain. We got to have shipping. We got to have, all this stuff figured out but I want to do it in 30 days. And it was sort of like an exercise in how quickly can you do this? Because, you know, when you set a time limit like that, you have to sort of cut some corners and, you know, think hard about exactly what you want to ship, knowing that you want to get to sort of a grander thing in the future. But, you know, ship it fast and figure out if people want to buy stuff from you online. And so we did that. It turned out it took about 21 days to do it. And we ended up writing a book about it. Ran the company for about a year. Towards the end of the first year of running it, we were doing, you know, towards the holiday season, around 400 to 600 pounds of bacon a day that we were shipping out, and it was crazy. I mean, it was just a lot of bacon.
Wow.
And anyway, so we ended up selling it to, you know, one of our big competitors, and ended up writing a book, and you know, it was just a really, really fun experience. And for me, it taught me a couple things. One, you know, bootstrapping is hands down the best way to build a business. And two, get a product to market as quickly as you can to start learning, because you can have the greatest idea in the world, but it doesn't mean a thing unless customers validate that idea and say, hey, I want to buy this. I want this thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's really shaped a lot of what you know, I've been doing since then now, especially here at Urban Airship.
Okay, so in terms of lessons learned or what you apply to Urban Airship, it sounds like, you know, kind of one of the big things was just getting something to market very, very quickly. Were you able to do that with your Urban Airship idea at the very beginning?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we did. So, you know, fast forward, or I should say, you know, go back to May of 2009, and, you know, the company I'd been working for was folding. I had a great team of, you know, 20 engineers working for me. I was the VP of engineering there. And, you know, I pulled together a couple guys and I said, hey, why don't we do something? Sure enough, you know, we came up with this idea of doing push notifications and in-app purchase for iOS developers. I said, okay, great. Well, let's ship the business. Let's launch this business in 30 days. And they said, okay, that's great. And the timing for us was around WWDC, which was, you know, the big developer conference for Apple. And we said, let's go live there with a product that people can use. I don't care about the website. I don't care about our marketing positioning or any of that stuff. Let's just go live and let's just kill it. And so we were able to do that. And then, of course, there was the whole, like, how do we get the word out, which is a whole other story. But, yeah, I mean, it totally informed what we did. We bootstrapped the business for the first 9 months. You know, revenue was well into the five figures when we went to go do fundraising. And what's great is when we went to go do fundraising, I won't say it was easy, because we tried to do fundraising 6 months before and it wasn't, because we didn't have that sort of product built yet. Or, you know, the demand that we really started to see after, you know, we got, you know, humming along there. But it was much, much easier. And more importantly, when we went to go fundraise, we knew exactly what we were going to do with the money when we closed the round, because we had paying customers who told us, we want this, this, and this after you, you know, after you ship the first version. So very, very exciting stuff.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about Urban Airship then, in terms of, I guess, what it is. Now, it's, I mean, what, do you consider it to be a product or just a framework or a service?
Yeah.
Or, you know, kind of what is that?
So Urban Airship is a platform as a service, and what we do is we offer, you know, what we've discovered over the last 2 years is that there's a need for app developers to solve two critical problems. One is, how do I drive engagement? How do I get users back into my app time and again? And more importantly, how do I understand that engagement so that I can better tune my app or, you know, drive more conversations through my app to the users? The second piece is, it's great to have users in your app, even better to monetize them. And so we have tools that help our customers do things like in-app purchase, manage subscriptions. We have a variety of other services that we'll be launching here pretty soon. But again, for the business, for us, if we can't drive engagement or, you know, help our customers monetize, we won't do it. And so, you know, the entire Urban Airship team here is always thinking about, how do we drive engagement? How do we drive that understanding? And then how do we you know, help our customers monetize. And so, you know, we love technology for the sake of technology, but we won't bake it into our product unless our customers want it and they're willing to pay for it.
So, Scott, is this like selling an ad service like AdMob to developers? I mean, how is Urban Airship's products and services different from, say, AdMob?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more different. I think, you know, advertising today is really interesting on mobile. You know, I feel like advertising today is a lot like it was in the late 90s. You know, people thought it was just banner ads and eyeballs. And, you know, it's more about data and context. Our customers are finding us because they want to enable notifications or they want to do in-app purchase. And they're realizing, geez, I have to have a server, or I have to, you know, write some server-side code and manage this, or I need to scale this because I want to send, you know, a million notifications. I want to light up a whole stadium in a second. And it turns out that's actually non-trivial. And so, you know, the way that it works for developers, they'll download our SDK, they'll integrate it into the app, and then they can enable either notifications, in-app purchase, or subscriptions. They tweak a little bit of their client code. And then we give them either a RESTful API to, you know, to send notifications or manage their in-app purchase and subscriptions pieces, or they can actually go through our web interface to do all those same things. So, you know, we have a nice push composer. We have these great reporting tools that allow you to see, hey, great, I sent a notification out, and I can see the response rates. I can see time in app opens, all these kinds of things that help our customers, you know, better understand it. So in terms of how customers use it, yeah, it's an integration a lot like the app play. But I really think we're, you know, kind of scratching an itch for developers and helping them focus on building great apps and not having to do all the plumbing.
Okay, so that's why people would use your service instead of going and saying, well, you know, I can just add push or I can add in-app purchases myself. You know, why do I need someone else to do that for me? So partially it's a scale thing and partially it's just a complexity thing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a lot like... you know, you wouldn't imagine spinning up your own email server today, right? I mean, technically you could. Anybody could do it, but why would you when, you know, you can leverage a service that's much cheaper, much faster, and, you know, somebody who does that all day long is going to do it much better than you can trying to run that. You know, we definitely have people ask that question, well, shouldn't I just build this? And we've had a lot of customers, you know, I won't name any of them, but who've gone off and said, look, we're going to go build this ourselves. We don't really want your service. You know, we think we can do this better, or we can do this just as good. And then, you know, a couple months later, they come back and are like, well, it turns out that was actually really hard. we just want to use you guys. And you know, of course, we're always happy to, you know, to take them as customers and, you know, excited. Yeah, you know, I think some of the other things, too, that are really, really interesting is there's this sort of critical mass. You know, we've got over 18,000 customers. We're on over 23,000 production apps across iOS, Android, and BlackBerry. And we anonymize the data across all of our customers. You know, we're on over 200 million devices. And we anonymize all this data from the 5.5 billion notifications we've sent. That helps us better understand on an individual device level how busy that device is, when it responds to notifications, those kinds of things, so that we can better help all of our customers engage their users. So it's, you know, not reporting or analytics for the sake of understanding your data. It's about, you know, learning how users consume these notifications and you know, helping them engage even better.
Yeah, Scott, you said something before that was that caught my ear, and that was the ability to light up a stadium. Assuming that, you know, people are physically located in this particular quote-unquote geolocation, can you elaborate a little bit about how geolocation plays into, you know, push notifications?
Absolutely. So, you know, today geo is, you know, geo is one of those technologies that has been coming, you know, it's been 18 months out for the last 10 years, right? And, you know, it's now really starting to happen. And you've got these smartphones that know who you are, now they know where you are, they know what you like, they know your friends, all these kinds of things. And, you know, location is going to start to play a bigger and bigger role as far as notifications go. We actually did a deal with a company called Simple Geo, and they're the best platform as far as geolocation goes. We're the best notification platform. We thought, geez, let's do a co-branded, essentially SDK that our customers can use. And sort of the use case is, I don't know if you guys lived through sort of the whole Bluetooth thing, but if you ever remember Bluetooth, the holy grail for Bluetooth was you're walking by a store and it could blast a coupon at your phone, right? Well, that sounds great if I own that store, but if I'm a consumer with a phone, that's like the worst thing ever. But if I as a consumer have already opted in to say, you know, download the Starbucks app because I love Starbucks and I've agreed to receive notifications, I'm now, you know, prime to receive these notifications. Okay, well, let's tie that into sort of a CRM or a drip campaign. And if I'm headed towards a Starbucks, right, I know my location, I know my direction, I know my heading, I'm headed towards the Starbucks, and you tie that to a drip campaign and say, well, geez, we haven't touched this user in 2 weeks. Let's send them an offer and see how they respond, right? Depending on how they respond, they may ratchet down that notification to 1 week, or they may extend it out because maybe this is a more casual user. They don't want to lose that you know, ability to reach that user. So we're starting to understand and see how these notifications can be impacted from a location perspective. One of my favorite examples is, imagine if you walk into, an electronics store. Best Buy would love to be able to send you a coupon at that moment, saying 20% off your next purchase in Best Buy. Oh, and by the way, here's a map to our closest store. Those are really, really interesting use cases. And when you think about, globally, in terms of retail, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3% of it happens online. So there's this massive, massive opportunity to be able to drive transactions, drive retail through these mobile devices, because now you have this, computer that knows who you are, where you are, what you like, and it's with you all the time. So super, super exciting stuff. I'm really, really excited about what's coming with the Geo pieces, and we have some really, really exciting announcements there that we're going to be looking forward to making in the next couple months.
Yeah, frankly, you don't sound that excited about this, Scott. No, only kidding. You know, when you were talking about Best Buy, all of a sudden I was thinking of Facebook Zuckerberg saying, you're at a bar and there are these other 8 hot single chicks that are about to enter the bar, so be prepared.
I was actually thinking about Minority Report and Tom Cruise like walking through that mall when all of the ads are just kind of popping up all around.
Yeah.
I guess what you're building is not nearly as creepy as that.
No, definitely not. Our customers effectively have to double opt in. We don't store any personally identifiable information about the users. We really privacy and protecting consumers' privacy is of the utmost importance for us. Of course, our customers' data. It's definitely an interesting time that we're in. There's a lot more data, and I think people are starting to share more and more. We'll just have to see.
Okay, so for your clients, I mean, they're giving you money for this service. Now, what exactly are they getting out of it that's going to be kind of worth their cost? I mean, you've got, reporting and kind of some knowledge of what your customers are doing and stuff like that. But how are your customers actually kind of making money off of this service?
Yeah, I mean, our customers make money off of this through a couple different ways. One is, they may indirectly make money, which is, they're able to rebrand users, right? They have, ESPN's a great example. We power a bunch of their apps. And for them, they have to be the worldwide leader in sports on every screen. Mobile is no exception. So they want to be able to send notifications quickly to, their fantasy sport players, their SportsCenter fans, all these kinds of things. And so, for them, it drives interaction with the other screens, or it's a companion while you're watching, sports on TV. So for them, they may not directly make money from it, but they're definitely rebranding users. And we see that with, news and some other kinds of customers there. There's customers who are like Groupon and Living Social who use us to send the daily deal. There's a great TechCrunch article that came out a couple months ago talking about how 14% of their overall transactions are happening through these notifications. So they're definitely making money from these kinds of notifications straight to the device. Because again, you're sending a notification to the user, and if you can time it correctly and get it to the user when they're most likely to want to consume it, you can drive a lot of conversions. You can get them to take action. If I can just, with the tap of my thumb, buy a Groupon, that's fantastic, right? And super, super powerful. All kinds of different daily deal type of things. We've got folks who are using us with both push notifications and in-app purchase. We've got folks like Newsweek and the Daily Mail who are using us for subscriptions. So they make money, on a monthly basis for their customers. We're really starting to see people figuring out how to monetize mobile. And we believe it's about creating a relationship, driving engagement, and then monetizing the user, through a conversation over time.
Scott, how are all these notifications managed? You mentioned like a CRM system. Would an enterprise have some API into the Urban Airship platform to, you know, communicate and analyze the data? Or is this something that's all on your platform that you have to go in and, you know, use your software?
Yeah, today it's all in our platform. They have a web interface that can see everything that they're, all the reporting pieces, all those components. However, it's bubbling up very high on the list from our other customers. They'd love to be able to feed this into their other analytics and reporting tools like Omniture, Web Trends, you name it. So in the coming, you know, probably two quarters, we'll have a means of being able to export that data in a real-time feed that allows them to, put that to wherever they want. Because at the end of the day, mobile is just one piece of, you know, the overall enterprise. I need to be able to report on, you know, web, my brick-and-mortar locations, as well as mobile. So, we definitely understand that. And that's something that we'll offer up for sure.
Awesome. And you mentioned earlier in the podcast that you guys pushed out over 5 billion push notifications. And by my count, that's a heck of a lot. Where do you guys go from there?
Just a lot more notifications. We're now just about on a billion notification a month run rate right now. Last Friday, we had our first 50 million notification day. So we sent 50 million notifications in a 24-hour period. We're definitely seeing the pace pick up there, and we're super, super excited about that. For the business, our customers, want more notifications on more devices. So for us, we're going to continue to offer notifications in-app purchase. We have some other services that we'll use to sort of broaden the platform, again, in the themes of engagement and monetization. And then we have a couple of deals and some products that we'll be releasing that get us closer to the device, where we'll actually be powering devices that we're super, super excited about. It's broader, more services around engagement and monetization, and then, of course, deeper into the device.
Man. I'm just kind of, trying to imagine the numbers in terms of, the 50 million messages a day and stuff like that. That is just, I just had no idea that the volume's that high.
I can remember when we went live in June of 2009, we picked up a fantastic customer with Tapulous, and they're one of the most, prolific game companies out there. And, we literally were sitting around. And I remember somebody we had a group chat, an internal group chat thing, and somebody's like, I think we're in production. I think we're live right now. And Apple had flipped the switch on Tapulous early, and we were powering the first app in the App Store that had notifications. And sure enough, I think in the first day we did something like 12,000 notifications, and we were jumping for joy. We were bouncing up and down. And we sort of looked at each other and we're like, God, can you imagine if we did like a million notifications in a day? and now we're doing 50 million a day, and it just, it's only going to get bigger. We're still only scratching the surface in terms of, the kinds of notifications, the number of devices that we're on. There's over, 4 billion mobile devices on the planet, and you've got a million computers, on the planet. So, we think there's just such a huge, huge opportunity here, and I think we're perfectly positioned to take advantage of it.
Wow. Now we also had a podcast a couple of weeks ago. It was very recently with Rick Trzoski, the Portland Incubator Experiment. And he mentioned your name and that you were, kind of involved with that or that you guys knew each other. What's your relationship with those guys?
Yeah, I was actually one of the co-founders of Pi back in the day. And we were one of the first tenants in Pi. And at the time, it kind of started as a glorified co-working space. But we realized pretty quickly that, there was a need for companies to be able to, not only have desk space, but to be able to bounce stuff off their peers. And really, I think one of the most important things, being a startup co-founder is, can sometimes be one of the loneliest places in the world. And just knowing that you have a bunch of people who are going through that same thing, who are struggling with the same issues, of building a business, can be really, reassuring while you're building that business, especially in the early phases. And so, the early versions of Pi were really, really ad hoc. And I'm so, so excited about Pi 2.0 and and what Rick and Rennie and Jason and all those guys have put together over there. So we're still active. I was actually just over there last night for a pitch club. And, you know, it's great. It's super, super exciting. They just announced their freshman class. And, you know, I couldn't be more excited. You know, we started there, the four of us. We all would literally sit around one desk and, you know, pulling our hair out, you know, getting ticked at each other because you're just sitting so close and you're, you know, working together 12 hours a day. And, but it was, you know, it was awesome. And I look back on those times with just the most fond memories ever. And, you know, we've got this amazing new space that we're in now. And you know, it's exciting, but I'll never forget, you know, the really, really fun times just crammed in that little space. No place to be on a telephone. I always had to sit out, outside on the porch because I couldn't, because it was this big echoey space. And I can remember in the wintertime, you know, being out there and having to wear fingerless gloves. And like my teeth would chatter on these phone calls and people would be like, is there something going on in the background? I was like, no, everything's fine, you know. But yeah, you know, all those things are just, you know, what's so exciting and fun to be part of a startup. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, I mean, surely those guys ask you all the time, like, you know, what's your advice? You know, what should we do as a startup? I mean, what's your kind of typical answer to those guys when they're looking for, you know, I guess that one golden nugget piece of advice from you about, you know, how to have a successful startup?
You know, I've heard it in a bunch of different versions. But, you know, when you hear from the people who have, you know, been successful with startups, it's not that they were, you know, grand visionaries or that, you know, they had this unbelievable execution strategy or whatever. It was literally, the answer is they never gave up. And this is a hard, hard thing to do, you know, building a business. It's hands down the hardest thing, you know, I've ever had to do, both professionally and you know. You know, that's always my advice is just don't give up, you know, and know that there's a lot of other people who've had to go through this. And, yeah.
So tenacity is the key.
Tenacity is the key.
Yeah, and I think Scott just had a blog entry. Was it today, Scott, about bootstrapping?
I did.
Bootstrapping a company. I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. Oh, great! Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, and actually, you know, you mentioned the whole kind of funding aspect of things too, and going and trying to get funding. Do you ever watch the show Shark Tank?
I don't. Actually, I don't. I've heard of it.
Oh, okay.
But I've heard of it. I haven't actually seen it though. Good show.
It is good. It's interesting because, you know, people are coming with their ideas and trying to, you know, essentially just get funding from these people. You're not talking millions of dollars, but if you haven't seen it, it doesn't matter. I was just wondering if real life was anything like that show. But,
I don't know.
Scott, if people want to learn more about Urban Airship and their products and services, where should they go?
Head on over to the website, urbanairship.com, and lots of fantastic documentation, facts, walkthroughs, pricing, you name it, as well as, you know, case studies and all that good stuff. So, yeah.
We want to thank you for being on the show today, and hopefully we'll have you back where you can talk about, you know, some great new stuff that you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.